Ramsey TV.
Okay, as promised, today I'm going to show you a photo of the page in my scriptures that I circled so many times. The words, "Did God," Romans 8:3. Oh, yes. Okay, well, should I do it now before I forget? Okay, first of all, welcome everyone. This is Martin Zender, and I am the host of MZ TV. So here's a photo of my Bible, Romans chapter 8. I've had this since 1986. You can see, "Did God." It's kind of, I guess I have other things underlined a little bit more there. I have something underlined concerning sin. You see how I have that really underlined. But I have "Did God" circled. I did hit it pretty heavy there. I can see that. So the words "Did God" were some of the first words, really, I believe they were some of the first words I circled in my Concordant Literal New Testament. And again, this was 1986 when the Bible got shipped to me from California. Those two words are two of the most important words in the entire scripture, and certainly in Paul's letters. And the whole scripture, as I told you yesterday, concerns what God did, what God has done for humanity. The Bible is not a recipe book for you to live right. It is a revelation of God and what God has done for humanity. I don't know why I'd never seen those words before. They're only two words of three letters each, but don't they change everything? Yes, they change everything. Again, why had no one ever pointed that out to me? Why were the nuns and the priests still badgering me, bothering me about my sin? Why did my mom keep insisting we have to go to Mass? We have to go to Mass every Sunday. We have to go to Mass. Why? It's concerning your sin. But what did God do? Nobody told me. Nobody told me. But something had already happened with sin. That's the thing I never was told. Someone named God, turns out, did something about sin. Now, I left the Catholic religion at age 18 because I suspected something was up. It was just dead. We kept doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I didn't read these words till I was 27 years old. Did I read the words, "Did God?" But from the day on which I read those words, I pointed them out to everybody else. And I know I've talked about this with you before, but I'm pointing them out to you now. I do like transposing it, that's true. Instead of saying "did God," I like to say "God did." God did something. See, I thought this "did God" was just another example of Paul. This is what I used to think. I thought there was another example of just Paul writing awkwardly. What was impossible to the law, and that it was infirm through the flesh, did God. Why didn't Paul just say "God did"? But I think I've been wrong. I think the inspired order is correct. What do you know? The Bible's right and Zender's wrong. Maybe Paul was not dyslexic. Yeah, now I think he meant with clear vision to lead with the verb. Did God. Absolutely. I mean, Paul, I am sorry for doubting you all these years. And it's been years, Paul. I hate to say that, but after 30 years, I see that we do need a verb here. And we need a verb quick. And we need a verb to smack us in the face. Because as soon as humans hear about sin, they want the verbs. They want to know what they can do. They want to know what they can do. Like the people I told you about yesterday who watched The Passion. What can I do? Nothing. You sit there in awe of what you just saw. We need a verb quick. And we need it applied to God. God doing this or that thing. See, that's become kind of commonplace. Like, I mean, God created the heavens and the earth. That's a great statement. How can you possibly yawn at such a statement? But you do. Oh, God did something else. God created the heavens and the earth. Yeah, yeah. So, you see, we're used to this, putting God first all the time. So anytime the name God comes before a verb, we get a little numb. We're kind of used to it. So here comes Paul putting what God does first, did God, and it's really singular, it's startling, it's unexpected, and it's inspired. Put the verb first, did God. I like that because it kind of jars you a little bit. It's the inspired order of the Greek. I looked it up. This is the inspired order of the Greek. So the Concordant version is faithful, even though it sounds awkward. So leading up to the first of two three-letter words, we have the word impossible. Again, I talked about that a couple days ago. And the phrase infirm through the flesh. Obviously, people have been doing, I must go back a long way. People have been doing things to warrant such announcements. Like, why does this have to be said? Because human effort underlies this context. See, God knows that human effort is going to want to come in, commandeer the situation, hijack it, and take the glory for itself. That's what free will is all about, taking the glory for yourself. So the word impossible comes on the heels of centuries of human sweat. Now, this stuff was written 2,000 years ago, but the human race is 6,000 years old, so this is like breaking news back in the day. And we're very blessed to live in this time where these truths are here, but again, they're lost to billions of people. If you hand somebody an unsolvable puzzle, this would be a really bad trick. You know, think of this. You hand somebody an unsolvable puzzle and you watch them suffer, like maybe a Rubik's Cube, but I mean, that's actually possible to do. So I'm just trying to think in my mind of a puzzle that's actually impossible. But you don't tell the person that it's impossible. So you hand it to somebody and say, here, try to work this out. And you just watch them suffer. And depending on how mean you are, how long you want to watch them suffer, you finally say, hey, I would wait like, I just can't. I would only wait 5 minutes. I know some people would wait 30 minutes. But eventually you say, hey, it's impossible. You can't do it. Or someone tries to run a three-minute mile. You tell somebody who doesn't know any better, it's possible to run a three-minute mile. It's not. But off they go. Yeah, full of confidence. You stop them on the track after one 60-second lap. You know, you give them a glass of lemonade. They're sweating. Ah, first lap in 60 seconds. Maybe I can do this. No. They say, hey, come here. Sit down. Here's a glass of lemonade. It can't be done. Relax. The same with infirm through the flesh. Infirm through the flesh. It's an anthem for giving up. What was infirm through the flesh? This is the star-spangled banner of throwing in the towel. Quit. Give up. Stop fighting your flesh. Stop trying to reform yourself. And who isn't in flesh? So this is always the tendency. Yeah, right there. You're doomed. Okay, you're doomed. It's the tendency. The very tendency is doomed. The very tendency to want to do this, to jump into the passion. The very tendency is flesh. We need this verse. Humanity had needed this verse for thousands of years before it actually came. And now it's actually come and people are ignorant of it still. You're allowed to point out to anybody that the source of the problem is flesh. Give them the old arm pinch trick. And the accompanying, remember, the accompanying sorrowful look. Ooh, you can't do this. So here comes the verb did. What the religious people are trying to do, God already did. Concentrate on that verb. Notice how it's in the past tense. Did God? Let's review. Get the fact that it's a verb first. It's an action word, did. Get the tense of the verb. It's in the past. Then find out who did the verb. Now you have a three-step process with which to combat anyone attempting to bring the law to you. The bringer. Here's what the bringer says. Do the law. You. Remember this? Pinch your arm. Oops. Sorry. bring her. I said do the law. You. God already did it. Concentrate on the word did. Have you noticed the tense of that verb? In the past tense. Now the question becomes, how did God do it? For what was impossible to the law, in which it was infirm through the flesh, did God, sending his own son in the likeness of sin's flesh, I'm Romans 8, 3 through 7, and concerning sin, he condemns sin in the flesh, that the just requirement of the law may be fulfilled in us, who are not walking in accord with flesh, but in accord with spirit. I also like this verb, sending. This is a good verb. This is what God did with Christ. This is what God did. Okay, God did something. What did he do? There's verbs all over the place in this context, and they're all attributed to God. And what are we doing in the meantime while all these verbs are being attributed to God? We're sinning. That's our verb, sinning. God sent his own son to earth to take care of the problem of sin. God sent his son. Let me ask you this, ladies and gentlemen. What happens when your drain is hopelessly clogged? I speak from experience here. You call a plumbing operation, and they send a plumber. Sent. See, I'm trying to think of another analogy with this. Sent. Sent. Isn't it great to know that someone's coming? It's like you wrestle with this clog, and you can't do it, and you call the plumber, and they say, we're sending a man right over. Oh, my God, you're sending a man right over. I love those words. How great it is to hear those words. Whenever I hear that we're sending a man over right now, I get peace and joy. Rare, rare happiness comes over me. My problems are over. What do I have to do now? What do I have to do? Nothing. Nothing. My problems are over. I just wait for the guy. I can totally forget about the damn clog. It's not my problem anymore. Oh, there's nothing like that form of release. But really, it can only be appreciated, this sitting back and waiting for someone to be sent. We got a man coming over. The only way to appreciate that is if you've wrestled with it. If you've wrestled with it. And I have. It's a kind of clog where no plunger works. You plunge it. Toilets are notorious. You plunge it. You pull that. Nothing freaking works. You put chemicals in it. Pour 1/5 of the bottle into the clog. That's what it says on Drano. Pour 1/5. 1/5. I pour 1/5. The clog laughs at it. 1/5. You come to me with 1/5. Kind of like Goliath laughing at David. You send me out a teenage boy. The clog says, you send me out 1/5. I empty the whole damn bottle into the clog. 1/5. I need 1/5 of whiskey is what I need. But I send 1/5 of the bottle in there. It's a joke. But the whole bottle doesn't even work. I mean, and then you try cussing. That doesn't unclog it either. I mean, I've used some words against clogs. You would not believe, but even the cussing does not unclog the drain. Because what I got here is a world-class clog. And before I make that phone call, I become obsessed about it. So it becomes a personal mission. You know, when you try to put something together with the instructions, and you're trying to put like lug bolt A into nut B and whatever, it's just things aren't working. You just throw up your hands. You say, I've had it. And you just somebody else comes in to do the job. Of course, this is all metaphoric. I mean, I'm talking about Christ coming, being sent to do a job. But life is full of clogs, ladies and gentlemen. It's full of clogs, metaphoric and otherwise. You start to think of the clog, going back to the literal clog, as Satan. I do. Or the offspring of Satan. No, it's probably not the offspring of Satan. It's probably your stupid hair. The hair that you pulled off of your arm. The flesh. Yeah. But that only makes the whole business more insulting and humiliating because it's due to your humanity. Now it's you. It's you against your own freaking hair. And your own grease and your own oil. Hair that's matted itself into a giant wet ball of old head covering. Mmm, delicious. Or as they say in Mexico, delicioso. And you see, you spend hours, you pour a whole bottle, you cuss, you do all these things, you against the clog. But as time goes on, the odds shift in favor of the clog because the clog doesn't have feelings. This is what I hate about clogs. Clog drains. They don't have feelings. I have feelings, and I'm being dismantled emotionally, spiritually, physically, in front of a clog, a freaking clog. It sucks. How could my own hair have conspired with my own toothpaste to do this to me? But then, then I make that blessed phone call. Oh, that call. You know how great it feels when you realize it's going to cost money to get a plumber, but when you finally come to grips with that and surrender to it, when you say, this is a job for a professional, I can't do this anymore. I've said the F word to it so many times, it should have unclogged every clog in Fort Lauderdale, but no. Then you hear those hollowed words on the other line. We're sending a man right over. Just sit back, sir. Relax. We're sending a man right over. Oh, the money doesn't, it doesn't even matter anymore, really. It's relief because relief is on the way. At that point, speaking of money, you would give anything at that point in exchange for the joy that this saying brings and the prospect of clog-free living that it promises. Ah, I look back at some of my worst clogs as I'm talking to you. It's amazing. So here comes the guy. The guy comes over in a spiffy uniform. And he says with genuine enthusiasm, he says, I'll have that clog dissolved in no time. Oh, my God. Of course, the analogy is Christ. You get that, right? Okay. I'll have that clog dissolved in no time. You could just cry for happiness. You could just cry when he says that. And he's got the spiffy uniform and everything. And 10 minutes later, the dude is finished. He's got that metal snake. He runs his electric. Got a drill. God, frick, the clog is destroyed. You just want to touch the hem of this guy's garment when he comes out of your bathroom or your kitchen. Now imagine this. Now imagine this. I'm getting really close now to the Christ analogy. God sending his son. We're sending a man down, God says. We got a problem here. What is it? Sin. Okay. Have you tried cursing? Oh, yeah. Tried that. Have you tried a fifth of your effort? No, I've tried all my effort. Fifth of my effort. No, I'm being mocked by sin. Being mocked by it. It's filled with disgusting things, filled with the opposite of the fruit of the Spirit, God. Well, God says, don't worry, I'm sending a man right down. Concerning what? Concerning sin. Well, that's a coincidence because that's exactly my problem, is sin. Oh, we're sending a man right down. And he comes down. He's wearing an odd uniform, but he does come down. But imagine this. Back to the plumber. He comes out of the bathroom. You ask him what you owe, and he says, he says nothing. We're running a special today. It's called grace. Have a nice rest of your life.